When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
What's standing between you and your first sale on Shopify? Time, expertise, resources? What if you could multiply all three? Product descriptions? Done. Store insights? Delivered. 2 a.m. customer questions? Handled instantly. Entrepreneurs on Shopify are reaching their first sale faster with AI that works with you. Go to shopify.com/firstsale to see how entrepreneurs use AI to grow their businesses faster. That's shopify.com/firstsale.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie Earle, and by my good longtime friend from work, Kyle Schoenewill. Also, if you're watching this on video, or if you've just listened to really any episode of this podcast, you will know that Kyle is a big Minnesota Vikings fan, and if you've spoken to Kyle in the last 24 hours, you know that he is literally glowing. It's like Captain Marvel when she saves Tony in Endgame, but just all purple. Because you had quite the weekend, which I really haven't gotten to hear much about this monumental football moment. But I'd love to. I never know when it's coming, and I love it.
I love it so much. I am on cloud nine, as they say. So shout out to all my friends on the team and shout out to all my fan friends. The Minnesota Vikings clinched their division, much to Joey from Slack's dismay. And it was in the most dramatic fashion possible, Robbie. But let me paint a picture for you.
Yeah.
They're losing to a 4-9 Indianapolis Colts team, 33-0 at halftime. It was the single worst half of football I ever watched in my entire life. And that's no exaggeration. It was the worst thing I've ever seen. I thought, holy cow, it's just not our day. Fun fact, Matt Romke from The Direct is a diehard Indianapolis Colts fan. So he like chirped at me on Twitter and I was like the lowest of the low. Man, that was the worst half. And then even in the second half, it didn't happen instantly. And with, I think, 6 minutes left in the third quarter, this is hard to wrap your mind around, it was still 33-7. And the Vikings scored four more touchdowns and a field goal, and they won 39-36, all in the second half and the fourth quarter specifically. Kirk Cousins, their quarterback, had 417 yards passing in the second half. Set an NFL record.
That's insane.
And so it was an NFL record, the largest comeback ever, surpassing, this is what's funny, the last 24-point comeback, Kirk Cousins, when he was in Washington in 2015.
No
so
way.
The only person to ever do it twice, which is insane. And in the playoffs, everyone knows the famous 28-3, Tom Brady comes back on Matt Ryan and the Falcons. So that's probably a bigger deal because it was a Super Bowl. But 33-0, crazy. So shout out the Minnesota Vikings and just how good my week's going to be. I'm traveling home this week to Michigan for Christmas. So happy holidays and Merry Christmas to everyone. But this is how I love to travel home because now I have a 9-hour drive that I can listen to everything in sports world. And it makes me so happy. And like seeing all my family, we're going to talk about it now. Like it just changes the whole vibe of the week. So I'm stoked. I'm really stoked.
Man, I love that. I hope that Kirk gets to wear all the chains.
All the chains, Kirko like chains. That. So chill, Kirko chains. And I got to say, shout out to Argentina for winning the World Cup if you're a soccer fan, because that just ended this week, and it was one of the craziest finishes ever. Just an incredible World Cup. So if you are a sports fan, now is an excellent time of year. This is not a sports podcast, but I did want to share that. So,
hey, I love that. I my level of personal investment in the NFL is largely connected to yours in that I can tell what vibe you're going to be bringing into a podcast.
Yes.
Based on the result of the Vikings game that week. So this is great for me too.
Well, and it should be noted, Pete as well. You know, Pete actually works with a few other NFL players. So Pete has that knowledge and brings that to the text thread as well. But I heard a little birdie, a.k.a. Candace, via text that you saw Avatar 2. Your dream.
Oh, gosh.
Your dream. Ravi spending time with James Cameron while I'm celebrating the Vikings victory. How did it feel?
Oh, man.
Say it wasn't that bad. Say it.
I won't.
I need to hear you say that.
I won't. Here's the thing.
It was that bad? Wow.
It was not good. We know it. I'm biased. I look out at the world through a lens that is not friendly to James Cameron. And I know. Here's the thing. I think as my mic's falling down here. See, it's like the world's conspiring against they don't want my truth out.
Speak your truth.
I have always said this, and I'm not going to go into all of it right now. Candace is looking. I'm not
Candace
saying I didn't
is
have,
standing in the doorway.
I'm not
right
saying
now.
I didn't have fun watching it. I'm saying,
yeah, that's what I tell her. Tell Candace. Tell Candace that's what I just said. I tell her that I said make you say something nice about it.
Kyle said that I needed to be nicer about it. Also,
I would agree with Kyle.
I love it.
For the third time in her life, she agrees with Kyle. Okay, I'm excited to talk about this later on with you if and when you see it.
I will.
We had a crazy viewing experience because whenever we went to the Spider-Man No Way Home extended cut, the only theater initially that was playing it around us was one kind of up. I think it was at Cinemark, actually. Maybe. Yeah, anyway, but it was up outside
of
town. Yeah, and they had these 40X theaters as options for the Spider-Man. Yeah. And I was like, this is my first time seeing this, maybe my only time seeing this. And I've heard it can be kind of distracting. Like if I were just going to see a movie I'd already seen before, maybe. But so we forewent that. And then as we were walking out, Candace was like, what is that? And then we walked in. It was crazy because these wild chairs with all these buttons on them and stuff. And she was like, we should come back and do that for Avatar.
To be fair, if there's a movie to do it for,
yeah,
it's that.
Right. And you know, I was like, okay, yeah, let's do it. And so we booked the tickets and we went. And it was just such an insane experience. I've never done that. Have you done the 40X thing?
No. I mean, other than like literal rides at
right,
Disney,
like Disney
you
World.
Know, that kind of, yeah.
It is, I mean, it's similar to that. And so your chair like rocks all over the place. And like, when they're like firing guns, it like shoots airbursts like next to your head.
Yeah.
It's like there are these little stuff that's supposed to feel like water. I mean, it is immersive. Like when there's an explosion, you're being like rocked around and they have stuff in the theater also, like in some of the underwater scenes, they have bubbles come out. And so it's like, it's cool. I mean, it's cool what they've been able to do. And I'm sure it's someone's job to figure out how all of that's going to translate and what all the cues should be. And so
make sure the bubble loader is loaded up.
Right. So it's hard for me to separate that out. I should say, first off, yes, we had a lot of fun because we were at this wild, like everyone says, like a movie made for the theater, popcorn flicks, like done right, James Cameron. And we were going to the 40X thing. And so it was fun. But I will just say what I have always said. And one other thing that's maybe going to be a hotter take. And then that'll be it until you see it and we can come back to it.
Here we go.
James Cameron is not a good writer. You know, I've said that. I've said that's not even the hot take. I've said that from day one. Like if you look back at the things that make James Cameron movies great, it's not the writing. And I am a person that I feel like that is such a huge part of whether I like or don't like a movie. The dialogue specifically. And James Cameron just, it's like if you go back and watch Titanic even, the writing is not great. Like the chemistry is good in moments, but it's really the set pieces, the effects, like that stuff James Cameron does a great job of. And there are moments in this movie where we get that kind of Cameron, like even Titanic, like early Terminator stuff, where it feels like a lot of practical effects. And I will give him kudos there because I think he's really, really good at that, has got a good eye for it. But the scripts are just, they're weak, but they're also just weird. Like some of the calls that he makes, like even some of the story calls, but the way he writes certain characters, there's just a lot. Like this is not even a spoiler because this was something I knew going into it like months ago, but like there is a character that is supposed to be the sort of daughter of Sigourney Weaver's avatar from the first film.
Okay.
And she's supposed to be like a teenager, but she's played by Sigourney Weaver.
Oh, I hate that.
It's so weird. Like the whole time,
her
like
voice
I never
alone,
got out of
can
the
just
weirdness.
Tell
of that.
Is older.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a weird. Like sometimes you kind of can get past it, and then there will be like a line delivery where it's like, oh, that's an older person, not a child. So, but there are just things like that, that like, I won't get into more examples of because they would be spoilery, but I'm like, man, these are some strange calls. But then the hot take part, if that wasn't hot, is, and Candace, for all of her shaming my negativity, agreed with me last night, whether she'll stick to it. The effects are good. But they are not revolutionary. They're just not. Like all the reviews I was reading, people were like, this is crazy. James Cameron does it again, just shows you why it's like a whole different level. And I'm not even gonna compare it to any particular Marvel movie or non-Marvel, like big blockbuster or whatever. Like if this didn't have all of the, oh my gosh, it's a new James Cameron Avatar movie and like he always moves the ball forward in some crazy way. Hype sure. Going into it, I think I would have come out and not even really commented on it. Like, I think if someone had been like, how were the effects? I would have been like, oh, they were great. Yeah, I mean, it looks good. Like, there was never anything that I was taken out of.
I never saw anything in the trailer, to your point, that I was like, oh my gosh, you gotta see it.
Like, I still, you know, you always talk about, and we talked a little bit last week about the Infinity War effects. Like particularly some of the stuff in the Thanos battles. And I didn't see anything. I would say the thing that I thought they did so well with the way they visualized Thanos as a fully CGI character, how effectively they were able to humanize his expressions. It's like you've got just the right amount of texture there. And it's like you have some really impactful shots of just this giant purple CGI guy's face that feel emotional. Right. And I would argue that while like the underwater stuff looks great, the creatures look great, like it all looks good. The one thing that Avatar fails to do as well, in my opinion, is that. Like I still feel like I'm looking at kind of cartoon blue people. I don't feel like fully sucked into the realism of the actors and the way they're being, and not saying it's a performance thing. It's just, so I don't know. I'm curious to see if I get ripped apart for that, but I'm just like, for a movie that's kind of all it brings to the table is the spectacle. In my opinion, it's doing it in such a way where you walk out. And I think most people can say like, yeah, like that was fun. And I will even say like at the end, there are some like emotional moments that hit for me. So I was like, okay, like I at least finish out walking through the story the way you probably wanted me to. But I just,
Sure.
You know, I'll be very surprised if this makes the kind of splash that the first Avatar film did. But
the writing comment you had earlier is interesting and perfect, because I feel like that leads us directly into today's episode and the conversation today about reflecting on phase four, mainly because it's so strange to me, of all people, that James Cameron has become like this figurehead of anti-Marvel, like of all people to like talk about.
Yeah.
It's just funny because what you just said, I'm not trying to do shots here at James Cameron. What you just said, like, you're not the best writer yourself. So I'm not sure I trust you critiquing the story behind these projects.
Right.
And like, of all people, for you to generalize superhero movies and be like, they're all bad. Wait, really? Like,
yeah. Yeah. It's, anyways. I mean, there's a lot, like, we were having a conversation about that on the way home. Like I said, I'm curious for you to see it, because I would love to get you and Annika's take.
It would
so
just,
maybe that's a, since Candace has apparently strong feelings on it as well, maybe we can do another.
To me, it's like, I would just take that critique a little differently from like Christopher McQuarrie, where it's like, if he was saying that Marvel films have ruined the blockbuster, then show me what the non-ruined blockbuster is. Okay, well then you make, you know, Top Gun Maverick or Mission Impossible.
Right.
And then it's like, okay, I get it. Like, Dead Reckoning, the trailer looked unbelievable in the action.
Yeah.
So like, thank you. Like, you're live stunting it all. That's cool.
Right.
But for James Cameron to say it, it's like, then you're going to give us Avatar? Like,
no, I totally agree. Like, the people that I, whether or not I agree with it, and you know, clearly for the most part, I don't because of this podcast, but there are people that I hear make those criticisms, and I see where they're coming from, at least, and can respect that perspective. Like, Christopher Nolan is one, Quentin Tarantino is one, Martin Scorsese is one. Like, these people, and Top Gun Maverick is maybe the best example of how you can still kind of do a classic, it's still a franchise, but a classic blockbuster that's more wedded to talent than IP. But yeah, I think it's because I see those as sprawling and epic and immersive in ways that I think are really impressive, because they reflect like a very particular creative vision, and they don't rely on this kind of IP machine that like Star Wars and Marvel and Harry Potter and, you know, all these other kind of big mega blockbusters have. But yeah, like, I think that,
yeah, that's enough.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one final note that I thought was interesting is, I saw someone tweet this the other day, The Fabelmans, you know, the Spielberg movie that's been out, which I really want to see. I saw a tweet talking about how, you know, it underperformed at the box office.
Yes.
And how kind of like ironic and I guess sort of like darkly funny, the idea that Spielberg, who in so many ways kind of birthed the modern blockbuster, is now at a point where the film that he makes kind of about himself, you know, that's sort of reflective and like quasi-autobiographical, to sort of chronicle that journey, is itself unable to really make waves because it's not the kind of blockbuster that he pioneered. And there there's levels there to where it's like, even that, those critiques, I think, sometimes come more just from, like, that I think often they come from folks that have maybe just been in the business for a long time. And I wonder if it's less a real creative artistic refutation, and it's more just a product of a bit of not jadedness, but it's like, I just think you're in it long enough and then you see something that looks different and it seems inherently lesser. And I don't, you know, I think maybe James Cameron is, I think as much as any director I can think of, off the top of my head, James Cameron has fully bought his own press. I mean, I'm sure you saw all the interviews where he was like, nobody else could direct an Avatar movie but me.
Yeah. It's kind of weird at this point.
But anyway, okay, sorry, I'm done. You started this, though.
Yeah, I did that. My fault. All right, quick, really fast trivia update. I didn't watch a new film, so no new question, but wanted to just tell people the answer. Is from Thor Ragnarok. I had asked, how many PhDs does Bruce Banner say he has? And it's actually 7, Robbie, not 6. You would guess 6 off air.
I know.
It's 7.
I saw someone write that in, and I was like, oh, gosh, yeah. So I would have been wrong.
And in Avengers Infinity War, who is Thanos' father? And he says, this is Thanos, son of Alars?
Mm-hmm.
And is AKA that like...
mentor in the comics.
Okay.
But yeah, same character, different names. So it is, you were kind of right in that.
Close.
Yeah, I think mentor is the name that most people would think of in the comic side of things, even though it is the same person.
Okay, so here's what I want the rest of today to be. And I love that you already started us on this journey a little bit here with the James Cameron talk. But we want to quick just take a little bit of a zoomed out look at Phase 4, kind of one last time. We'll be doing the friendlies the next time you hear us. So that is still reflecting on Phase 4, but in a totally different way. And those votes and those votes come from you and from Friends From Work plusers. So this is our chance to kind of give our last take on Phase 4. And I want to do it in a 3-part segment. We've talked about all the nitty gritty for literally 2 years at this point. So we don't have to rehash a ton of that. If you want to know our specific thoughts on individual projects, you can still go back and find those episodes. A lot of times the last episode of each show, for example, or our initial reactions episode or reflection episodes to the films.
Let's start at WandaVision episode 1.
Yeah, here we go. Going back. What is grief? Segment number one, I think should be, I want you to introduce the official Friends From Work Phase 4 rewatch order, which is something that I know you actually put a lot of time and effort into, and a lot of our listeners are curious. And I'm especially curious because I'm about to start my Phase 4 rewatch myself.
Mm-hmm.
I have to watch Avengers Endgame still, and after that, I'll be diving right into whatever the first project is. I'm excited to hear from you on that. Segment number two, I just want to give a few final thoughts on Phase 4. I went up and did a weird calculation of sorting my rankings in a unique way. So we can kind of talk about that. And then in segment 3 of today's episode, you and I are going to come up, or at least compromise, on one official Friends From Work rankings of all of our films. We are going to officially go from 2 lists to 1 list. And then you can always ask us about our preferences, and we can bring those up all the time. But we're going to go to one Friends From Work ranking. We're going to do that live on air, which you haven't even done. And if you're watching this on YouTube or hopefully eventually on Spotify, I'm actually going to have the graphic up so you can kind of see what we're working with here. So that's the kind of fun stuff I can do with video. All right, so Robbie, without a whole lot further ado here, why don't you reveal your Phase 4 rewatch order, however you want to do it. If you want to go project by project or just kind of list it, I'll let you take the lead here.
Yeah, so this has been, like I said last time, it really took, especially having Wakanda Forever out, to be able to look back and do with Phase 4 what we had previously done with the Infinity Saga. Mm-hmm. I do want to give a shout out to Greg, who Friends From Work Plus listeners have now heard from on the Movie Club episode.
That's right.
For Creed, which I listened to and was a ton of fun.
Did you enjoy that?
I did. I very much enjoyed it. Yeah, it makes me want to get back into my Rocky rewatch. I also saw the Creed 3 trailer again in theaters before Avatar 2, and it looks really good to me.
Creed was pretty good. I've never seen any of the Rocky films, and that was a fun episode. Fun to have Greg. As a little teaser, I also now have a Star Wars episode out featuring Annika and Lance from Slack. Mm-hmm. So this is becoming a fun tradition. I think you'll enjoy that too when you get around to hearing it. I know you haven't finished Andor, so you probably won't listen to the whole episode yet. But when you do, you'll want to go back and listen.
So I finally, by way of an update, I got to start Andor, and part of the reason, once I decided I was going to watch it, I was not putting it off, but a friend and I had kind of had a conversation where we realized we were in similar spots. We had been recommended that show so many times, and we just hadn't really gotten around to watching it. And so we made plans to for him to come over one night and us to at least start it together.
Okay.
And I was out of town and he was out of town. And so we finally were able to do it a couple nights ago. And I only got to watch the first episode, which I know Lance had said to try to watch the first three if possible, but just kind of because of the way we did it.
It's slow to start for sure.
However, yeah, I mean, this is not the place for this. You have a whole episode, but initial reactions.
The episode is 85 minutes long, by the way.
Love that.
Yeah, I went all out here. 40 minutes by myself, just ranting.
All I want to say is I felt like it was an almost immediate jump up in quality from almost anything else I've seen on Disney Plus.
Okay.
Not just Star Wars stuff. Even I would say the bulk of Marvel stuff. It just felt like some of the conversations we've had in the past about how certain Disney Plus shows didn't feel prestige to me in the same way that like HBO shows did. This feels like way closer to that HBO side than I've
100%.
Come to expect.
100%. So, and this is perfect leading into our segment too, basically. That's part of the conversation. Yeah. I think right away, because of the side actors and the writing to me, of those two things, you're like, yeah, this is in like the WandaVision Loki tier of stuff.
Yeah, I thought about Loki. It reminded me of that. And the visuals I thought were just really impressive. But
yeah.
Okay, anyway, I say all that and brought up the Greg Creed episode because he's someone that I think has taken a lot of interest in this. And so he will message me from time to time and ask how my thoughts are shaping up. And so he spurred these conversations and was kind of someone I could bounce a lot of this off of. But
love it.
Yeah. I think we are finally at our, phase four watch order, and it starts off similarly to the way that it always has. Like a lot of the rationale that I had for the beginning there sticks. So we won't belabor that, but I really like coming out of Endgame, which is such a great, final feeling film, like the fact that it doesn't have an end credit scene and all that stuff. And then coming back into WandaVision, it's also kind of tonally similar to the way that it ends with Peggy and Steve in the 50s or whenever, and then us kind of opening up on a similar shot.
So WandaVision first, okay.
Yeah, so WandaVision, which and also gives us such a great coming back from the snap, like the first time that because you're in Westview, you don't know what's going on. And then episode four of WandaVision is the first time you're actually back in the post-Endgame world. And that's when you see the whole kind of undusting moment, which I still think is the coolest way that we've seen that depicted. I also really like the Hawkeye one, but I think this is still my favorite.
Okay.
So I think that's a really good way to come back in. Then we have Falcon Winter Soldier as the Cap and Steve legacy, and then Far From Home as the Tony Iron Man legacy. And so that's still the same as it's always been. Where things start to shift is after that, because I think originally, like early on, we had it going from that to Shang-Chi, which is at a totally different spot now. What we're doing here is we go from
You're saying it, I'm referencing our Journey Through the MCU playlist, which now has your order. So I'm just trying to keep track by looking at it. So WandaVision, Falcon and Winter Soldier, Spider-Man Far From Home.
Yep. And then, so the way this kind of works is like WandaVision opens up all of Phase 4, kind of in a similar way to how we have Doctor Strange doing for Phase 3. And then we have the check-ins with Cap and Iron Man. And then we go into a whole new kind of wide lens, backup, totally new approach for Phase 4, which starts with Eternals, which I like a lot because it is such a different feeling movie. It sort of it totally retools what you think the Marvel Cinematic Universe is, and you learn a lot about Celestials and what's been going on Earth and these people that have been living in the background. That movie ends with the post-credit scene introducing Blade and kind of gives you a little bit of that vibe towards the end, which I think makes it the best transition point into Werewolf by Night, which is what we have next there.
Wow, that's interesting. Okay.
So I really, there are a couple things here that I it took me a long time, and I don't know that there's a perfect way to do it, but I think I found the one that I feel best about. And okay. Werewolf by Night's a hard one to place.
Sure.
At one point, I thought about trying to put it near Multiverse of Madness, you know, just because they both kind of have that like
monster-ish,
spooky Halloween
weird,
feel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But what I kind of wound up doing here is, whereas Phase 4 had looked like kind of a year long, like a really packed year, it's now kind of looking more like two. Like, and you'll see there are almost like two cycles, given that now we kind of have more holiday-specific feeling things and some of the timeline clues we were given from certain movies. And so I thought, like, that Blade connection there with the kind of Midnight Suns-ish, like that part of Marvel, and the fact that we can then lead from that into Moon Knight,
sure.
Which, you know, Moon Knight famously debuted in a Werewolf by Night comic. You get all the focus on the moon in both of those for obvious reasons. And so I think it actually makes it, like I previously liked the Eternals to Moon Knight transition, and I still do, but I think this fits in well.
And Werewolf is, there's no way to fall back on it just strictly chronologically, right? Because we don't have any idea the time it's even taking place. We talked about how it's like black and white and it feels old, but then there's like LED lights that look like it's 2020 or 2023. Right. Like there's no way to really determine that.
Yeah.
So it's just strictly tonally, I guess, is my point.
Yeah. Which is, I think, where we've kind of erred in general. I mean, we try to follow a rough chronology to make the story make sense, but, you know, just make it feel like you're going through intentional little mini arcs, like we always say. This is probably a project that can move around more in the future, depending on kind of where the Werewolf by Night characters wind up. But as of now, I feel best about putting it near Moon Knight. And I think that it kind of fits in that phase of just introducing whole new elements, which is kind of the whole point of Eternals. But what I like about this in general is those first three projects are so familiar. They're the ones that reflect the most explicitly on the events of Endgame. And then you end on that kind of cliffhanger from Far From Home. And I know a lot of people like putting Far From Home and No Way Home next to each other because of that. But I actually, because most of No Way Home takes place months after that, just that opening scene takes place right after Far From Home. I kind of like doing this tour around what else is going on. And then coming back to No Way Home after we've kind of gotten the perspective. So
WandaVision, Falcon Winter Soldier, Spider-Man Far From Home, Eternals, Werewolf by Night, Moon Knight. That's where we're at so far.
Yes. And so then Moon Knight transitions us into Thor Love and Thunder, because Moon Knight's the first time we really have the conversation about gods in that way, like in terms of people's relationships with them and there being such a thing as an avatar. It's like a totally different way than we talked about gods, you know, in the original kind of Infinity Saga meaning, like with Thor and Loki.
Sure.
But, you know, then, and apparently for folks that don't know, at one point there is going to be a reference to gore in Moon Knight.
Yeah, right. Which we actually both wanted, right? I think that would have been a fun way to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not quite sure why that, I can't remember why that didn't happen, but the fact that it was intended makes me feel good using those in conjunction here. So, and then we kind of get this, you know, like the kind of darker, more mystical thing with Eternals, Werewolf by Night, Moon Knight, and then transition back into like a more familiar, but a side of the MCU that makes sense given the focus on the Pantheon with Omnipotent City. I also like having Love and Thunder earlier on because we see Thor still dealing with the loss of all of these things before we see Loki again. And so when we see like the back tattoos with Loki, like I feel like it carries a little bit more weight because we are still living in a space of Loki being gone, right? Like, we know that he went somewhere in Endgame, but we haven't just gone and spent a whole season with him prior to this. So I feel like it's easier for that to hit. However, I think that since we're kind of back in Thor world, that makes for a good transition into Loki. So we go from Love and Thunder back into that, which kind of gives us both halves of like the Asgardian characters. And then like we had before, Loki and the, you know, multiversal breaking, or however you like to look at that, leading, like I think we had it previously, into No Way Home, still feels really good to me.
I'm loving this. I love how much thought you put into this. I kind of just watch them, but I love it.
My hope is that this comes through, if only subconsciously, for people.
It's wild because some of these feel like they're so long ago. Like Thor doesn't feel very long ago, but then to think about watching that before Loki, I get the thought, but it's just weird because Loki feels like a different life ago almost.
And I think that's part of the fun of this is reinventing it somewhat, you know, like if you can make the order different enough in a way that's still compelling, it almost lets you.
Oh, I'm getting stoked to rewatch it right now.
Yeah.
Just talking about it. Yeah.
So another big change comes after No Way Home, though. And that's because at one point, and I don't know if we ever made this official or not, but at least kind of in how it was showing up on the playlist and how I was thinking about it, I had No Way Home going straight into Multiverse of Madness, because that movie is supposed to take place in, I think, in between the like Statue of Liberty scene and the Christmas scene in No Way Home. So basically like right before. That's what I don't know that that's official, but that's kind of what all the chronology sleuths have.
I kind of just like the Christmas scene leading right into Hawkeye Christmas.
Exactly.
I like that.
And so that's why we brought that back, because I always liked that too, like the fact that it's New York and Christmas and I don't know.
And it's centered around Christmas too. Like that's not just Christmas as a side story there. It's a big part of Hawkeye. So that feels kind of natural.
It felt weird to go to Christmas with Spider-Man, jump back to Multiverse of Madness, then go back to.
Sure.
So that was something I was trying to crack the code on for a while. And we'll get to what the solution was whenever we get to Multiverse of Madness. But yeah, so we came back to Spider-Man straight into Hawkeye. And then, you know, like I was saying, that kind of closes out the first, like, quote unquote, year of Phase 4 with Christmas. And then we start the new year with Shang-Chi, which I think makes sense because if I remember, there's like a holiday that they're talking about at the start of Shang-Chi that is supposed to take place towards the start of the year.
Okay.
So that makes sense. It's also like another kind of in the same way that Far From Home ended. And then we started like a new unfamiliar mini arc with Eternals and Werewolf by Night and Moon Knight. We're kind of doing that again here with Shang-Chi, with starting a new character.
Directly into.
Yeah. So, and this I went back and forth on, but wound up being really excited about how this works. Because, yeah, if you remember, Shang-Chi ends with this great in-credit scene, one of my favorites that it made both of our lists.
Oh, yeah.
Top credit scenes, where really for the first time since Endgame, we get a check-in with Bruce and Carol. I'm trying to think if we had seen... I don't think we'd seen Wong at that point either.
Don't put me on the spot right now.
I don't think we had, if I'm remembering right. So, I guess we did briefly in. Yeah, see, now I'm getting release order and
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Anyway, that's what I'm saying. Anyway,
it doesn't matter. But in this viewing, we've seen him just in No Way Home, and then we see him again in that Shang-Chi cameo, which kind of perfectly cues up at the end, like both in his scene in the fighting ring and then also like the end credit scene, his appearances in She-Hulk. Mostly because we have in that final scene, Bruce with his arm in the sling. And the big question was like, why is his arm in the sling? What's going on there?
Good point.
And so the fact that we have that credit scene that focuses so much on those two characters, and then we have She-Hulk, which immediately answers the Bruce arm in the sling question. And then also gives us like kind of a Wong status update. That then leads us into Ms. Marvel, which is also kind of a follow-up from Shang-Chi in that we get that scene where we see like the Ten Hands logo and we get like the Shang-Chi theme from Laura Cartman. And we're getting this sense that there's some kind of tie between the bangle that she has and the Ten Rings. So that's kind of its own little mini trilogy there that kind of follows up.
Not ending on Black Panther.
I'm just seeing. No.
Okay.
And the other thing with Ms. Marvel being there is we finally get the follow up to Carol from that end credit scene. So it's like, if you look at the credits from Shang-Chi as informing the next few projects, it actually makes a lot of sense because you get some level of answers as to where each of those characters are by the end of that little mini arc, especially with that end credit scene of Ms. Marvel that we like so much. So yeah, the last ones here are fun for a couple reasons as we round it out. And some of this is me reading way too much into it, but that's kind of the fun of it. Ms. Marvel kind of famously introduces the concept of mutants into the MCU.
Right.
And so in the same way that it kind of closes out that other little mini arc coming out of Shang-Chi, it also kind of opens up another one that is granted very much a minor
mini arc.
Yeah. But we get the introduction of mutants there, and then obviously we get an even larger mention and exploration in Wakanda Forever. Still not huge, but especially on my last watch, I noticed like there were a couple of, like they really do focus on some of that language and how different he is from the other
mini
ones.
Arc.
And this is, before I get to the actual kind of final project or projects, depending on how we look at it, I said when Wakanda Forever first came out that I thought it was the perfect ending to Phase 4. And I still think that from a release order perspective, in terms of kind of where we are when it came out. But the more I thought about it in terms of the grieving side of it, which was so much of Phase 4, kind of spiritually and symbolically, it felt like a great ending. But in terms of the actual story that was being told across the greater MCU, I just didn't think that it made a ton of sense ending it off there, because it's such a, like, we get the kind of global geopolitical thing a bit, but it's a pretty Wakanda focused story.
Sure.
And so I like having it here because one, it kind of not only comes out of the conversations, like the mini mutant arc, like we were saying, but you also get some interesting, like, there's some synergy even between the stories that we get in Ms. Marvel about the impact of colonialism and how that kind of birthed like her as a hero ultimately. And the same kind of story that we get with Namor in Wakanda Forever, which like both of those, like they have obviously happening in different parts of the world and at different times, but I think you see similar themes playing out. So I think that makes sense there. And works as a good ending to like this whole little mini arc or mini arc that we're talking about, starting with Shang-Chi. So I almost view all of those as being like their own chunk within Phase 4, like Shang-Chi, She-Hulk, Ms. Marvel, and Wakanda Forever.
Then you close it off?
Well, so I think She-Hulk and Ms. Marvel just tonally fit pretty well.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
But yes, so then the actual closer, and people that are keeping track will have probably guessed this, is Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. And this is not what I had initially thought of. as being the finale to this phase. But the more I sat with it, I loved so much starting phase four off with Wanda and sort of focusing on her as such a perfect transition character from what the Infinity Saga was to what the Multiverse Saga will be. And I feel like that's
closing with Wanda.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I love kind of coming back full circle. And
for me, the big thing's going to be, this will be easier to decide in a few years once we see how important Wanda becomes or isn't.
Right.
Like, if she becomes like a massive player in this, I love it being like the beginning and ending of the phase to really leave you on this cliffhanger of, she's all powerful. Mm-hmm. She kind of sacrifices herself and we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
If that's all we ever see of her, maybe that's a little different. But if she becomes a huge player, that makes so much sense to me.
But even if we don't see any more of Wanda, I still think WandaVision is such a great opener. And I still think what I like about this is that as the closer, even putting her aside, is that like we open with this, like WandaVision gives us like barely any hint of a multiverse. Like we do get some lines, I think, from Agatha, and then we get like the Nexus commercial. And so we get a little bit of that. And then, you know, like about halfway through phase four, we get the first real follow-up on that in our watch order with Loki, which is when we really find out about it. And then No Way Home that kind of immediately follows that. And then we come back. So it's almost like a beginning check-in, a middle check-in, an end check-in. And given that it's like the multiverse saga, I imagine we're only going to be getting more projects that deal with that concept. And those sorts of conflicts. So I just kind of like that that's where we end this phase, is coming back to like, this is the greater narrative. And I think that if we're heading towards Secret Wars, this idea of incursions that we had introduced in Multiverse of Madness is going to wind up being really big. And I feel like as I look back on phase four, you know, we've always done the thing with the watch order where we didn't do the palate cleansers as the final movie. We would do the Avengers movie or whatever we felt was the, it's always been an Avengers movie that kind of summed up the preceding phase and ended that chapter.
Right.
And of all of the movies that, or projects in general that came out in phase four that I think have that kind of significance, not emotionally, but like greater story-wise, I think it's got to be this one, because that it kind of leaves us on this, like even the final scene of Doctor Strange, the final credit scene, which I still don't love.
Right.
You know, the like, you caused an incursion. Like that's where we leave things, to where it's like, that's the kind of new state of the world going into phase five. And so I don't know. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think I like the symmetry of it. I can be kind of a slave to symmetry sometimes, but I think it's okay here. Yeah, so I really like that as the actual close, although that does still leave one project to discuss.
Well, and that was my question. Is there any harm in putting the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special after Hawkeye to just stay in Christmas world? Like, there's no timing there that messes that up.
That's true. That's true. So I've thought about that, because yeah, right now we kind of have Guardians as an end of the phase placeholder, and I've considered pushing it to phase five, depending on what the timeline there looks like.
Okay.
And when we wind up having the Guardians movie in, because I do like actually closing out with Multiverse of Madness, not Guardians.
Okay.
But yeah, that's a good point. I don't know if there's anything
TBD on that one.
Yeah, I could see putting it back with Hawkeye. I think I need to see how those would blend. And
so
maybe
as of now, just so people can kind of keep track, as one final summary here: WandaVision, Falcon and Winter Soldier, Spider-Man Far From Home, mm-hmm. Into Eternals, Werewolf by Night, Moon Knight, Thor Love and Thunder, Loki, Spider-Man No Way Home, Hawkeye, potentially Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special after that, Shang-Chi, She-Hulk, Miss Marvel, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, and then, you know, for all intents and purposes, ending it with Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah.
There it is.
So, yeah, I am hopefully going to be walking through this pretty soon, too. Like I said, I've been caught on Ant-Man and the Wasp for a bit on my Ant-Man watch, but I'm hoping to be able to kind of catch up with you soon on yours, because I'm going to try to do all of Phase 4 before Quantumania. So we'll get to test it out.
I can't wait. I'll give you my feedback live, obviously, on this podcast as I'm working through it. And then it will probably start blending into getting new Phase 5 stuff. So that'll be wild. Let's come right back and talk a little more Phase 4 after a quick word from these sponsors. All right, Robbie. So segment 2 and 3 here will be pretty quick and kind of tied together, because it mostly deals with just our rankings of this. And so I just wanted to share one tidbit I researched, and then we can get into the rankings. It was just interesting for me to go back as an exercise and jot down all the films and write down specifically what phase they come out in, only because, first of all, I've been watching for like the last 3 years using our rewatch order, which is not strictly keeping everything in the same phases, because we throw a few things around. So,
like,
for example, Black Widow is a Phase 4 film that we watch in Phase 3, okay? But if you just deal with it strictly as Marvel defines the phases, I jotted those films down. Something, first of all, that was interesting is I didn't realize that Phase 3 had a significant more amount of films than any other phase. And by the way, with Phase 4, I'm not counting the shows right now in what I'm about to tell you. This is just the films, okay?
Okay.
So there were 6 projects in Phase 1, there were 6 in Phase 2, and there are 7 in Phase 4, but there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 Phase 3 projects. So in general, just a lengthier thing. I thought this would be interesting.
There are 11?
And again, 11. Here are a couple disclaimers from me. This one I'm about to tell you is just based off my personal rankings, so it's not science, right? Like we said last week, this is correct as defined by me saying it's correct, okay? So this is not a science. The second thing is I'm just taking these numbers and where they rank, and then I'm adding them all up and then dividing them by the number of films to get an average score, with the lower numbers being better, right? Because 1 would only have 1 point and 30 would have 30 points. So the lower number is the better number. And taking into account that I'm not using like a Rotten Tomatoes score or something. So like, meaning if a movie is way worse, it's still only 30th. It's only one spot lower in the score. So it's not going to skew it maybe as extreme as some reviewers would do. Does that make sense? Because they would take, like, they'd say Incredible Hulk's a 30%. Well, that's going to really hurt versus just one spot lower, okay?
I see what you're saying, yeah. Okay.
So, for example, like, Iron Man is 9th for me. Incredible Hulk, 30th. Iron Man 2, 24th. Thor, 29th. Captain America, First Avenger, 22nd. And the Avengers, 8th. So that's the first phase, right? So I have a 9 and an 8, and everything else is in the 20s or 30s in Phase 1.
Okay.
Crazy. Wow. So I did that for everything. This is what I found interesting. Phase 1 added up to a score, Robbie, of 20.33. Okay? You don't know what that means yet. Phase 2, 17.5. So lower score is better. So better. Phase 3 jumps all the way to a 13.09. So basically a 13. That's a huge jump given the jump we just made. But get this. You ready for this? Again, according to my rankings, Phase 4, 13.4.
Wow.
So my rankings almost average out that Phase 4 is as good as Phase 3. I thought that was fascinating. So basically, for me, it goes, just off these numbers, again, it's not a science, it would be Phase 3, Phase 4, Phase 2, Phase 1. I just thought those were, and it's not even that, I mean, we're talking Phase 4 is only behind by half a point. If you had asked me ahead of this, I would have said Phase 3 is going to win by 2 points. You know,
that's really interesting. Huh. But
here's why. Yeah. Okay. Phase four, depending on where you rank Eternals, for me is 20th. Some people have Eternals at 30th, literally. Mm-hmm. For me, Eternals is a little more bottom mid, not the very, very bottom. Again, I'm going to change these once we rewatch it.
Right.
But the difference with phase four is every movie is in the teens other than that. So you have No Way Home at 3 mm-hmm. and you have Eternals at 20. But then for me, I have 11, 12, 14, 15, and 19. So there's no movie in there that really, really brings it down. Phase three, yes, it has 1, 2, and 4 in it, which is incredible for me, right? Mm-hmm. So that's like hardly counting against them at all for a score. It has 6 and 7 as well with Homecoming and Ragnarok. That's the thing. But it has Ant-Man the Wasp, 23, Captain Marvel for me at 27. So there are a few that still drag that down. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 at 26.
Right, right.
So, I don't know, just fascinating. I guess I also probably wouldn't have told you that phase one would have been my lowest, but when you think about it, there are some movies in there like Thor, Incredible Hulk, Iron Man 2, that they just aren't great. Relatively speaking, I love all of the MCU, always.
Yeah, I think it is funny because they're the, you know, you and I did a Friends from Work Plus episode about kind of what you immediately think about when you think of a movie. And when I do that with phases, it's funny how there are certain movies.
That, what do you think about with each phase?
So phase one, I think I either think of Captain America 1 or the Avengers.
And I always think of Iron Man.
Right. Which makes sense. But I think for me, it's partially loving Captain America, but I always think of kind of where I start with that. But then Avengers is such a, like, I think initially that shocks me because I'm like, oh, but like, then I was thinking, oh, but Avengers and Iron Man. But then, yeah, you're right. Really?
Yeah.
Like, those are the three, and I have yours, Captain America, the first Avenger, a lot higher than you.
Yeah, so maybe yours would be a little bit better because of that movie.
Yeah, that's true. But
not by tons, I don't think. Not enough to swap with one of these other phases, I don't think.
It is. It's funny, though, because I think of phase two so often as like a treading water phase. You know, like I think of Thor the Dark World, which doesn't really move the story a ton. And I think of like Iron Man 3, which doesn't really like move that story forward a ton. But then I always forget that phase two is also Winter Soldier and Guardians.
Right. You know, like, and that's what's influencing that score. Right. I got to double check my math, but that's why that's still better because Guardians is 5. Some people have it higher than that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I think it's...
And Age of Ultron, I have it 16. That's not terrible.
Right. No, the phase one, phase two conversation, it's almost like your rankings kind of make this make sense to me now. Like it almost is a phase one and phase two, phase three and phase four conversation in some ways. Like we've talked about phase four as its own phase one, and that's a whole different thing. But yeah, it's like I think...
See, what's interesting for me is you said phase one, you think of Cap. I think of Iron Man. But when I think of phase two, like if you had said right away, I go to Winter Soldier for some reason. I feel like that was like a dividing line of like, this is a new tone. That's what I always picture.
I guess it's so fun. I mean, I go to Thor 2 probably because I've now like trained myself to think of that movie.
Obligatory Thor 2 reference. Boom. Done. Cash the check.
I think of those because they were the first two projects in release order of phase two, if I remember right. It was Iron Man 3 and then Thor the Dark World. And they were both such like... Iron Man 3 is a much better movie, but just in terms of what they were doing, it was so clear that Marvel hadn't quite figured out how to go forward from there, like what it looked like to have the world where everyone knows each other and they're operating. And so it was like... So I think of that as like quintessential phase two, because that's how I always think of that phase. But then there's a moment where, like that Guardians Winter Soldier moment is almost like, I think of that as like introducing phase three in terms of the type of content that we are going to get. Like it was like them figuring out what it should look like.
It'll be interesting to see if phase five has a similar treading water feel to phase two or not. I think probably not, because what phase five has that phase two doesn't have or didn't have is phase five is still going to have films that are wrapping up sequels and trilogies for characters we already know. Whereas in phase two, we knew like nothing was getting closed off. Like it was still all going forward. They weren't going to end any character really there.
Yeah, I think that's what made phase two, like early phase two especially.
Like Iron Man 3 had his third movie, but we knew Tony wasn't gone yet.
Right. Yeah, it was interesting because we didn't really, I feel like that was also early enough in the MCU to where people weren't keeping track of things like phases. Like I think
That's true.
You know, like they had, like Marvel had them. I think you could buy like a phase one collector's box after the Avengers came out. Yeah. But that was only like
it's
I remember
recently more popular.
Yeah.
To say that.
Like I remember, I think you and I were on tour once with Seth, with our buddy Seth Penn. And I remember I have this vivid memory of him explaining the phases to me, because that wasn't something I was even really familiar with. And that was probably what, like 2013?
That makes sense.
So I think in phase two, we almost didn't have any sense of what the timeline was looking like. And that's why I think it's another reason why we probably look back on phase three. And to your point, in phase three, it has some really quality movies, obviously. But I think we also look back on the feel of phase three so fondly because it was like the rising action. We were coming to this like, okay, everything's finally coming together feel that we hadn't really felt since probably the first Avengers movie. Like that kind of excitement of like, because Infinity War was the first time Marvel had sort of topped that, oh my gosh, look how well this worked feel of the first Avengers movie.
Right.
And so I'm curious like what that would look like for like as we get closer to Secret Wars. Like if, yeah, you're right. Like will phase five feel like phase two in that way at all? But you know, what's interesting to me is like we didn't have an Avengers movie in phase four, like we were just saying. So the difference there even is we have like, the, you know, in phase one, you had all the Avengers introduced and then they all meet each other in Avengers and that's the end. But in phase four, you have so many new characters introduced, like from the Eternals, Shang-Chi, Ms. Marvel, Moon Knight, She-Hulk. And there's never a moment where they all come together or some like there's some like final battle that everybody fights. So that even makes it inherently different from phase one.
So here are my final thoughts, and this will lead into us ranking these one final time. I think it's also interesting that phase three did still have those three, not missteps, but with the momentum they were building, unbelievable films, there are still three that I felt like were a little bit added in at the time. Like, I really enjoy Ant-Man and the Wasp, but I do remember being like, at the time, like, oh, this is kind of a weird side story to be telling, because this was post-Infinity War, like post-the dusting. Like, how do we have another Ant-Man movie? I've said so many times on this podcast how I was kind of turned off by Guardians 2, not feeling like it ramped up at all, like to anything that we were building. And then everyone knows Captain Marvel, like I totally had like a visceral response against because of the placement of trying to tell a new story like 2-3 months before Endgame.
Right.
So it's interesting because you were just talking about new characters, like the times they did kind of give us some new characters or like follow up on people are a lot of the ones that didn't work as well for me, which is interesting. And then phase four, what's fascinating to me is that even though they've stylistically swung so big, they've all almost landed in the middle for me, to where my overall feeling of phase four is that other than No Way Home and maybe Eternals, I kind of liked all the films in phase four, but I didn't like love any of them besides those. Besides No Way Home. No Way Home, I loved. Like, obviously, tier one. All the rest were like, these are good.
Yeah.
And I wonder what that says about the the quality or perceived quality dip or lack thereof. And that's my final thought on it. It's interesting when you don't include the shows, which obviously you have to include the shows as part of the cinematic universe. But when you're not talking the shows, I don't know that I see any kind of quality dip when you're just talking the movies, really, relative to the other phases, you know? So I think a lot of that discussion probably comes from some of the Disney Plus shows. I think that's fair to say. These movies are still controversial, but I don't think you can walk out of them and be like, well, people think this, but I don't think you would leave it and go, it's terrible. It's obviously like they're way stepping down. Yeah, they're doing with multiverse stuff, so it's going to deal with a few looser type things. It's going to be different, but I don't think the films themselves are a massive quality dip. I think that conversation must come from, for me, some of the TV shows. That's my final thought on that.
I think the dialogue around Thor: Love and Thunder in particular has been so interesting, and that I think that seemed to be a real touchstone for folks that were looking for evidence of a dip in quality. Now, I think what's funny is and this is what we were saying last week with me wanting to rewatch that in Multiverse of Madness specifically. Multiverse of Madness, I remember walking out of having loved it. Like, I really did love the direction they went. Like, I recognize some of the, like, I'm not saying it's perfect and it's not ranked as though it is, but I was like, yeah, this feels like what I want a Doctor Strange movie to be. It's weird. It's kind of scary and kooky and whatever. And then Love and Thunder, I came out like really, like I still think
like you loved Love and Thunder the day of the premiere. Like when we were out of the theater, you were emotional from the ending, which I was too. And
that's what I was gonna say.
The goats made you laugh so hard the first time.
that's why I'm like, like those two I think are the ones that are often criticized. And that's why I'm kind of coming back to those. But I think Love and Thunder was easier to criticize because...
Well, and Black Widow. We're higher on Black Widow than other people. That's a problem for these scores. But
that's true. That's true. Although I feel like Black Widow was more like forgettable for people than it was objectively bad. Like I think
and you know, to a counterpoint to my point, we're lower, I guess, on Shang-Chi than a lot of people apparently. So I think those balance each other out in this exercise. Does that make sense?
That's true. I think to finish my thought I just, because I think you're right. Like
I interrupted you.
I just think like Love and Thunder is even, I said this in the Slack the other day. I feel like people always with these kinds of movies, like I'm not a like, what, you don't like that? You're wrong. Like your opinion is trash. Like I get that that's our whole conversation and why we're kind of changing up the rankings the way that we do is because so much of it is just preference. And that's, you know, you should be honest about what you like or don't like. So if you don't like Taika Waititi's Thor: Love and Thunder, that's totally fair. But I do feel like the more I reflect on that movie, the more I think people just misunderstood what he was doing there. And so it's interesting that that has become like outside of Disney Plus, that and to some extent Multiverse of Madness, where the like, look, these are like downtick in quality movies. Because for me, I really enjoyed both of those in different ways and for different reasons. And I think both have certain strengths and both have what I would consider to be weaknesses. But so, yeah, it's like given that, I think that I look back on phase four films pretty highly as well. Like I think, but even if I didn't love those as much as I did, you're right. Like Shang-Chi did really well commercially for the time of year it was released, still coming out of the pandemic. And it was a brand new character. And critically was really well received.
To me, phase four was just spectacular but flawed.
Like
I said, I don't remember feeling
I think
this could go on forever because it's also fascinating. Like I was the one that felt like No Way Home was a slam dunk walking out of the theater
right
when it happened, whereas I was a little less sure, especially of Doctor Strange. a little bit of Thor. Yeah. But in general, I think I liked it, didn't love it, a lot of it.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see where Phase 5 goes. I have two tiny things of news. Then I'll do the final rankings. I don't think we ever talked about this in the podcast regarding this. Two things. Just interesting. One, there's been a lot of rumors going around. I think you maybe brought this part up, that Marvel, now that Bob Iger is back, is going to kind of like relook at how they do things with Phase 6 and 7 and maybe try to err more on the side of quality versus quantity, which is something we've talked about on this podcast ad nauseum. But that's interesting in this context too. Like,
right,
if that is true, first of all, it's a big if. We don't know that. If that's true, and if they are actually aware of that, that does add some commentary to this discussion.
Yeah.
Secondly, on the Love and Thunder thing, I totally agree that I think the film in general is misunderstood. I saw the article you posted the other day. And I still like it. Like I said, I think the swings were bigger, so the hits were bigger. Like some of the visual stuff and some of the emotional moments for me from the hospital scene on. And some of the jokes were funnier. And then some of the misses were bigger, where I was like, ooh, this feels out of place. But I don't know if you saw this. On the sad news front, Chris Hemsworth found that there's some signs of early Alzheimer's in his family. So he's kind of taking a step back from acting. That he like made that announcement maybe a couple weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, that he's just going to like slow down a little bit on what he's doing. But in interviews he's done since then, not acting, but just like promo stuff for things, because I think he had that Limitless thing on Disney Plus. Anyways, he's been talking some. One thing I found interesting, you can Google this, and it's been making the rounds. He was asked about Thor 5, and fascinating to hear him talk about it. He said two things. He said, first of all, if I do it, it needs to be a drastically different tone this time around.
I did see that.
And he was kind of referencing how like the first two movies kind of fit in the same thing, and now I've done this really like zany thing. And to keep the character moving forward, it needs to be something different. To which I kind of say amen, because we talked about that. We're like, if he now goes backwards, right, and becomes more goofy or something, that doesn't fit with the character, with what he's gone through. So I agree, like tonally, and even if he's just saying that from like an acting perspective, I think that's the right call to kind of change that vibe, first of all.
And I think Love and Thunder leaves him in a place to do that.
Yeah. The second thing he said that I thought was fascinating, I'm sure you saw this too, was like, he basically said like, I can't make another movie with Taika. He said it would actually kill me mentally. And Google this. You think I'm making this up? And it might not be as, I'm saying it maybe harsher than it came across, but he was basically saying like, I cannot make another movie like that. And I don't know if he's saying that from like the fan perception, or just that it's so zany and so weird that he would just want to do something different at this point. But I thought that was interesting for him to say that. Again, all those things in the context of this conversation are just fascinating. That doesn't change how I feel about the film.
I think
it's interesting to hear the lead character say, I'm ready for something different.
Well, and I mean, I think that makes sense, because I mean, even Taika, I think, came out and, you know, you never know how much stock to put in anything that Taika Waititi says, because he's always kind of joking. But I think he said if he were to come back and do another one, he would almost just want it to be like to have zero fighting scenes in it. Like, he just wanted it to be like a road trip movie or something. And like, I think the more I think back on Love and Thunder, and I don't want to, this obviously isn't a Love and Thunder reflection, but I just think on parts of Phase 4, and I think Love and Thunder is so reflective of that in so many ways. Like, I think Love and Thunder to me shows a set of creators that, one, we're kind of dealt an interesting hand with that character of where Endgame left Thor. And two, had kind of come in and reinvented something so successfully and showed a willingness to kind of buck the norms there. And I think they wanted to have the same experience, like, using that combined with like the status quo that Endgame had left to try to do something as different and as creatively satisfying for them there as Ragnarok had been. And like, remember us talking about all the craziness of the Ragnarok set and how free-flowing that was. And I think what other people look at Love and Thunder, like when they look at it as being like lazy or, you know, Ragnarok 2.0 or you know, whatever, like just too many jokes or not enough substance. I look at it differently as, and I think this goes for a lot of Phase 4, like, okay, we are coming off of, like we're in a different spot than we were in Phase 3, in that if you think about like Phase 3 coming out of Age of Ultron, which was not critically like, I mean, it wasn't a flop by any means, but it was not seen as a positive step forward. And so really like everything in Phase 3 was, I think, critically received higher than Age of Ultron. So it was all like this march up. Whereas Phase 4 comes off of literally the biggest movie of all time, one of the best critically received Marvel movies ever. And so they're one left with having to like pick up the pieces of that, like I'm saying with Love and Thunder, but also figuring out like, well, we can't just like go back and redo the same things. And we don't even want to just try to do the same things, but dress it up as something different. Like, let's actually tell stories that we have fun telling, and let's try to like explore some different ways of doing these things. And that's what I see Love and Thunder as. Like, I think that that's Taika being like, let's take some of these crazy parts of these Thor comics that they were, and I was to some extent maybe, afraid or unwilling to explore fully in the Infinity Saga. Because in the Infinity Saga, Thor was essentially just a really strong alien. You know, like that was kind of his thing. And the Thor comics have never been that, right? Like the Thor comics were like delving into all of the pantheons of gods and like these epic quests and like dealing with Norse mythology. Right. And I'm not saying one is right or one is wrong, because I love the Infinity Saga, but I think that Love and Thunder was Taika being like, well, here's the material and here's something I'm excited about. And I want to tell a story about love, and I want to tell a story about like how a person that has been dealt all of this would actually move forward and maybe flip the script some on what like a superhero movie and like the like,
sure.
I don't know. So like I think that was so much of Phase 4. Like it was, and that's why it's hard for me to really dislike any of those movies.
Right.
Because like what we've always said, like, I think I just respect Even what Chloe Zhao was doing in Eternals, every time I watch it, I'm like, yeah, I really appreciate like just the attempt here. And there are parts of that movie that I think actually work really well. But also just like, yeah, I don't, you know, I'm glad that Phase 4 wasn't Captain America 4 and Captain Marvel 2 and Ant-Man 3. Like,
sure.
You know, I'm glad that we had a chance to try some big swings.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't
know. I feel very similar. I love it.
Well, I am really excited to go through this rewatch and around the same time as you, because I'm
same. I will be rewatching and keeping these in mind, and then also I'm just excited to see how these movies age as well. Like, how does Phase 4 age? Like, do some of these things get better as we get further along, or are we going to look back and be like, wow, that was a misstep? Okay.
Yeah.
Our final rankings are brought to you by our friends at Epic Hero Shop. They make the best nerd merchandise, as you've heard us say, all year long. We love their stuff. I'm not wearing it currently right now, which is actually a rarity, but be sure to be checking out epicheroshop.com and use the promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK to save some money off your first purchase. And they're going to have some incredible stuff coming up in the new year. So epicheroshop.com. Okay, we don't have time to fight over all these. I've put together a list that's trying already to merge our lists, knowing that there are a few hot button topics that we're going to have to compromise on, right? So like Captain America First Avenger can't be as high, or Black Panther can't be as high as you're thinking, but it can't be as low as I'm thinking, okay? Right. So we have to come to some consensus on a couple of these. Others will be easy. Are you okay with me saying number 30, Incredible Hulk, Thor number 29, and Thor Dark World number 28? Are you okay with those three being the bottom? Iron Man 2, number 27. And I know you'd probably swap Dark World and Iron Man 2, but because I have it so much higher, I need one more spot above there.
No, I feel good about those.
Okay. I'm going to write this down.
I was thinking about your recent Incredible Hulk Thor swap. and I was debating it, but.
So then I would go Captain Marvel 26, Eternals 25, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, 24. Now, I know a few of those you have higher, but I'm looking right now, and our audience can see, if you're watching this, our rankings side by side. And I don't think that's that controversial either. I have Captain Marvel personally at 27. You have it at 26. So I feel like 26 is a decent compromise there.
Yeah. No, I feel good about that.
Sorry, I'm writing these down. I love it. And then same with Eternals. Like, I remember you defend the film a lot, and so do I, but then I got to the end of this list, and it's like, I have Eternals at 20, you have it at 25. So I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt here by putting right. it at 25. And Guardians 2 is 24 for you and 26 for me. So I feel okay about that order. I feel okay about...
Wait, so Captain Guardians Marvel 2 is where?
24, above Captain Marvel and Eternals.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I feel good about that.
Okay, and then 23, Ant-Man, 22, Iron Man 3, 21, Ant-Man and the Wasp. So do you agree that Ant-Man and the Wasp is better than Ant-Man?
Do
you agree this is about the range?
Yeah, I'm debating whether...
Your individual rankings has Wasp at 22 and Ant-Man at 23.
Yeah, and... I think I would, I'm debating the Ant-Man's and Iron Man placement. So right now we have Iron Man 3 under the Ant-Man movies, right?
Yeah.
I think that's right. I think that's right.
Well, it's Wasp, Iron Man 3, Ant-Man, which we could swap if we had to. We could swap. Iron Man 3 is a tough one because I do like the emotional work it's doing, but just Iron Man 3 is being dragged down because of preference for me, which is weird.
Yeah. Let's keep it that way. I think I like the Iron Man 3 sandwich there, but maybe we can always revisit.
All this is going to change in the new year. Then we have Captain America, the First Avenger, which is kind of the very, very top of the last tier, the bottom of the first tier, which again, not crazy. Yours is at 19 currently. Mm-hmm. For me, it's 22. So 20 is the compromise. I put Doctor Strange at 19 ahead of those films. So for me, Doctor Strange is still better than the First Avenger. Would you be okay with that?
I can live with that. Okay. I can live with that. Look, the thing is, you've come up a good bit since we started this podcast on Captain America, the First Avenger, to where we even have it that close. So I'm grateful for, I'll take what I can get.
All right, here we go. Now it starts getting really weird. 18, Shang-Chi. I like Shang-Chi. But yeah, you have it at 16. I have it at 19. So this order is always tricky. Shang-Chi, Age of Ultron 17, Far From Home 16, Love and Thunder 15, Wakanda Forever 14, Multiverse of Madness 13, Black Widow 12. How in the world are we going to come to a compromise on how that actually falls? Like how those fall?
Yeah.
Like, is Black Widow a better film than all those? Despite the ending concerns.
Well, and
Far From Home a more solid film if you don't take into account like the comic background of Spider-Man? You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're just watching it as a story, or is Shang-Chi better than all those despite the like mystical and some weird CGI things? That's the hardest chunk.
Yeah.
That's going to move around. That's going to move around.
Well, and Shang-Chi is maybe it's the opposite of the Love and Thunder Multiverse of Madness thing I was talking about where. I really liked Shang-Chi walking out and have always really liked it, but I think that it's hard because it is it's a totally new character. And so like even comparing it to like Age of Ultron, I think Shang-Chi is a better movie than Age of Ultron, but, and I think this is supposed to be our more like
we can
quote unquote objective, right? Because I think,
yeah.
But preference-wise, and this could change, like this is the kind of thing that could totally change with Shang-Chi, Captain Marvel. Like if we get down the line and I start to have the investment with Shang-Chi that I have with the characters that show up in Age of Ultron, then even the preference thing could swap. But I do think, okay. I think we swapped those critically.
I swapped them.
Okay. And so then
I don't think that Shang-Chi is necessarily doing anything like extremely better though than that next batch. And I know Love and Thunder is going to be really polarizing for some people. So to have that 15 is really high to some people. But again, some people thought it was unbelievable the first time.
Right, right.
All right, so Multiverse of Madness and then Black Widow being the top of those, that could be controversial, but 13 and 12. Then I have Avengers at 11 with Black Panther at 10, and that's a compromise because Black Panther for me is like 16.
Uh-huh.
You have it at like, let's see, you have Black Panther at 6.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you can live with it going down to 10. I could make an argument for why Iron Man is better, I think, at 9, Winter Soldier at 8, Civil War at 7, which that hurts me a little bit because I think I would go higher there. Homecoming 6.
Mm.
Let's pause there for 1 second. Let's pause there for 1 second. Again, we'll get the final dialed in next year.
When but I'm still, yeah.
Is Homecoming better than Civil War? It's so hard. Civil War is better than Winter Soldier. Do you agree?
I agree.
And Winter Soldier is a better film than Iron Man. If you take into account maybe the time it came out, maybe not, but I think it's a better movie. Winter Soldier doesn't have like the villain thing problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Winter Soldier is I think it's better than Iron Man.
But I like all of those more than Black Panther only because of a few of the concerns I have with some of the realism of the final act.
Yeah, I think I would fight. I think Black Panther is still the first one especially is still so unique in not just culturally, but even story-wise, what it was doing. Like, I think the Killmonger villain, like, remembering that came before Thanos, you know, the version of Thanos that we got in Infinity War. I guess it was after Homecoming.
But it's not better. It's not better than Civil War or Homecoming, right?
No. But it's hard because I think that I think some things about it are, but I also
overall,
agree with you
though,
about some of the like my I think my only real issues with Black Panther though are some of the visual concerns that you've set out. I think maybe my compromise would be put Black Panther above Iron Man.
Okay.
But below Winter Soldier. I think I feel okay with that.
Okay. I'm doing it right now. Okay. And then the top five. I'm going to give you, unless you have a huge argument, I think I'm going to give you the Endgame number one slot.
Wow.
I think. It's not because, it was my two. It's either one or two.
Right.
And we've had this conversation so many times, but Infinity War is flawless, but doesn't maybe reach the pinnacle. So do you like a little more of a roller coaster ride in your quality, a little bit more, or do you just like the steady, like unbelievable steady?
Yeah.
I'll give you the Endgame one because I think plot wise it's having to do more. And the fact that it's even like getting remotely close to landing that plane is unbelievable. So I think I'm gonna give Endgame one.
Yeah, I think it's higher floor versus higher ceiling, ultimately.
Yep.
To me.
But I think the two of us are going to agree with one, right? You can be okay with that.
I think so. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I think, and this is another thing where, Infinity War, well, actually, even Ant-Man and the Wasp, Infinity War, Endgame, and then all of Phase 4, I'm going to try to kind of reevaluate as I'm watching the way you have been. Not going fully back to the drawing board, but so... It'll be interesting to kind of watch those in light of us having had this ranking conversation.
we always have had this conversation with Endgame and Infinity War are 1-2. Then there's a chunk from 3 to 7 always to me that are like perfect films that it kind of comes down to your preference. And that's hard for us. And then I think from like 8, 9, 10, 11, you start getting like unbelievable films that have slight flaws. But No Way Home 3, Guardians of the Galaxy 4, Ragnarok 5. I feel like your preference, you'd want to switch Ragnarok and Guardians, but I feel like critically, if you rewatch them both, you would be like Guardians has aged even better than Ragnarok.
I think that's true. I think even when we first ranked Ragnarok, I struggled with that. And I think that was one of those first, like one of those early preference versus like objective or attempt at being objective perspective, where like, I think Ragnarok, I'm attached to the Thor character in a way that I'm not as attached to Quill. And so that's why like that movie hits for me and the humor. But I think Guardians Volume 1 is just, I mean, it's such a well-made movie. Like we've said, like it's just,
It's the one that you could throw on a pedestal and be like, here's what makes superhero movies like fun. Like just, if you're going to watch one, just watch this. And just, if you have no other long running story, just watch this one and be like, this is fun. Like, this is why I like movies.
Yeah. And it doesn't require any explanation or like, cause even Thor Ragnarok at some point, like you can't just show that to someone totally cold. And so,
and just like Infinity War and Endgame, that's the same with No Way Home and Guardians to me, where it's like both you and I have a few things in No Way Home that are kind of like, that doesn't work as well, or that's a little goofy, or, but the highs maybe being even higher.
Right.
Higher ceiling.
Yeah.
So anyways, we'll finalize these and we'll post this on our website, the ffwpodcast.com. I know a lot of people are into this kind of thing, so check it out there. It's easier to see it. But as of now, our top 10 would be Endgame, Infinity War, No Way Home, Guardians 1, Thor Ragnarok, Homecoming, Civil War, Winter Soldier, Black Panther, Iron Man, which I feel like is pretty close to what
that's
we can be
okay
with.
That's a solid top 10.
That's a pretty solid top 10.
The Phase 4 block down there is one that
we have to reorganize. Yeah. We have to reorganize.
Yeah. And it's... Those are, man, it's like I'm starting to see certain trends in like even as you were talking about No Way Home and Endgame, in some ways I they're so different tonally, but in some ways I almost think Homecoming is to No Way Home what Infinity War is to Endgame. Like I think you know, like they're like Homecoming feels like a tighter movie, but doesn't have those highs. And then, with Phase 4, it's like Black Widow is... And I think part of the problem there is like we just almost don't even think of Black Widow as a Phase 4 movie. And it's so different from Wakanda Forever and definitely Love and Thunder and Multiverse of Madness.
We'll work on this, but I also think we might end up wanting to swap Civil War and Ragnarok. Again, I love Ragnarok, and I know that'd be hard for you, but Civil War, to me, just holds such a special place in my heart. It's interesting that a few of our listeners on Slack created a Google Doc that actually adds up everyone's rankings. So, like, we have a community score here as well. I'm looking at it. It's fascinating. Huh. I'm not sure how many people were involved in this survey, but they have Infinity War, Endgame, No Way Home, Civil War, Guardians, Winter Soldier, Ragnarok, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, Thor, Love and Thunder, then Homecoming. Our audience has Thor, Love and Thunder ahead of Spider-Man Homecoming.
Wow.
Huh. Again, just fascinating. So I'll post this. Yeah. I'll post a link on Slack where you can find this chart as well, because I think Joey made it. It's really cool. It's really cool to see. And
I'm glad that Joey, we started this, where Joey got wrecked for his Indiana Colts fandom because
No. Well, Joey's a Packers fan, I think.
Oh, that's the okay. Indy sorry, fan. Sorry.
But he was just, as a Packers fan, being a troll because I'm a Vikings
fan. I see, because so, the Packers. Yeah. Okay. Well, regardless, so, now we're coming back full circle to
redeeming it.
Joey gets a good moment here. I will say, as we close, talking about, you know, phase four and the new watch order and everything, Kyle mentioned the Journey Through the MCU playlist.
Yes.
We now have live the three kind of Friends From Work MCU music playlists that people may or may not be aware of, but kind of as response to some conversations we had about a year ago, we have the Journey Through the MCU playlist, which is always, that's been the one that's been going for years now. And
the main list.
It has roughly, the number of tracks differs, but the number of minutes per movie is about the same, but roughly like four to eight tracks per project. And then we also have the Shortcut Through the MCU playlist, mm-hmm. which is funny because now that has, like, just given the sheer number of phase four projects, that's just one track. Short. It's one track per project, and it's still 2.5 hours long to listen to. Yep. But
which
then,
confession, that is sometimes my scene. I figured out because a lot of times I'm wanting the main themes, and that's basically what it is, like the main themes for every show. And then you have the Earl Cut.
Yes. The Earl Cut. Yeah. Which was, it's funny because it was a very fair text, but like a year ago, I guess, I remember you saying like the Journey Through the MCU playlist is unlistenable. Like, we've got to get it cleaned up, which was true. I was going overboard.
I was being funny, but yeah.
I was going overboard though, particularly with the Christoph Beck WandaVision stuff. Cause there's so much there that I was like, how do I cut any of this out? But
yeah, well, it's
so
genius. Yeah.
My initial response was to do the Shortcut Through the MCU playlist. And then we had some folks, in our Slack that were like, whoa, no, like I want to go the other way with it. And so now we have the Robbie cut, which is every full score, of every project in the correct order, which was kind of its own project.
It's every song.
It's every single, it's all the scores. It's no popular music, like no soundtrack stuff. The hardest part, Kyle, was after I got through this, because, you know, like Journey Through the MCU, it's all done, like not all movie scores have the track listings chronologically. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. And so some of the MCU scores, like when I do a Journey Through the MCU, like I'll have the songs from the beginning of the movie at the beginning of that chunk, and then oftentimes like the big finale song at the end. Because the goal of the Journey Through the MCU playlist, like I was texting the other day, has been less a sampling of everything and more trying to kind of tell the same story that the watch order does to make you feel like you're watching the movies.
Yeah.
But whenever I was doing the Robbie cut, I realized like at least a handful, like I think Thor the Dark World and Age of Ultron, the scores are not sorted correctly. So I had to spend like a lot of time figuring out exactly where each track went in each movie. And then I sorted them chronologically throughout the movie. So
stresses me out.
The luckily, I think that all the newer ones have been in the right order. So I haven't had to do that. But so all three of those playlists are in the Friends From Work watch order, and they're all available on our Spotify profile.
You guys should check it out. I love listening to it. Great airplane music. If you have some noise canceling headphones, great driving music. If you're at work or something, you can have music on. Just kind of fun to have in the background.
It is nice.
I'm becoming like obsessed with just film scores, which is wild. Well, guys, in closing, if you've made it this far, we appreciate it. A couple of really important things. First of all, we'll have time for this, but it's just been a really special year for us. So I'm so thankful as we kind of close the chapter here on crazy to say that on 2022. Cause the next time we're talking to you won't be for a few weeks now, I think 2 or 3 weeks off. And then we'll be checking in with the friendlies. So that will still kind of be one or two more episodes kind of reflecting on this, but I'm just so grateful. I'm so grateful for this audience and this community. And I'm thankful the growth we saw this year is really cool. And I'm really excited to see what can happen in 2023, season four, phase five. So I'm just thankful. And I know Robbie is too. And I recorded that little episode with my wife talking about Star Wars, and she wanted to punch one more thing. And I was like, what do you want to punch? And she jumped in and said, I'm just so thankful for everyone that listens to my husband's podcast. And
wow.
I was like, that's really cool. Cause it has really changed our lives.
Yeah.
It's changed Anik and I's life, especially this year. So I'm thankful for all of you. And we have some really fun stuff we're excited about getting into in 2023 and some non-MCU stuff. I think that'll be fun as well.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of really cool movies coming out in 2023. Yeah, don't forget to check out Friends From Work Plus if you're into this podcast and you want a little more of it. There's really fun stuff over there. I hope everyone just has an awesome Christmas break. And sometime over Christmas, we'll probably post on socials and on Slack that our ballot will be updated for Friends From Work Plusers. So you can go on there and start getting your votes in. We'll announce the nominees, but then as we've always done, I won't know any of the results until we actually do the episode, which is kind of fun. So get your votes in there. We love you guys from the bottom of our hearts. Thank you for everything. And we'll talk to you next year. Happy New Year. Merry Christmas. We'll see you in 2023 here on Friends From Work.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tantandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
These days, I can do anything from my phone. Book a vacation, order a meal from a five-star restaurant, buy and trade stocks. But maybe the most amazing thing I can do is make my dirty laundry disappear and then reappear perfectly washed and folded. I have Rinse to thank for that. I just schedule a pickup in the Rinse app or at Rinse.com. A Rinse valet comes to get my clothes, and before I know it, they're back, crisply folded and ready to wear. They even do dry cleaning, which is returned hanging in a nice Rinse garment bag. And with Rinse, my satisfaction is guaranteed. If for any reason I'm not happy, they'll re-clean my clothes for free. Best of all, Rinse saves me tons of time each week. That's time I get to do something I love versus something I have to do. So if you want to save loads of time by not doing loads of laundry, remember, there's an app for that. Rinse. Sign up now and get $20 off your first order at Rinse.com. That's Rinse.com.